This is Dr. Jimmy Nichols, equine nutritionist. On this podcast, we will explore unique cases, debunk popular myths, and break down advanced research data. Join me for a little fun, a lot of science, and some real-world advice for feeding horses. Hey everyone, it's Dr. Jimmy. Welcome to episode 78 of Feed Room Chemist. This last week has been a ton of fun. So I was invited to be a speaker at the amazing Cowgirl Gathering event that was held in Fort Worth, Texas. It was hosted by Kimes Ranch and the Cowboy Channel and also the American Paint Horse Association. And let me tell you what, it was a top-notch event. And I still am feeling just incredibly honored to have even been part of a lineup with, just such amazing women in the equine industry. I mean, we're talking multiple-time world champions, extremely successful entrepreneurs in our industry, and some really just super talented and respected clinicians. So, you know, the fact that they let an equine nutritionist on stage and in front of the camera felt pretty humbling. So it was a fun experience. The other fun thing that has happened this week is I finally bit the bullet and I created social channels for Feed Room Chemist. So I know it's taken like a year and a half, but we are just about to hit 250,000 downloads. And I felt like maybe it was probably time to start interacting with you all on a little bit more of a personal level, or at least interacting more outside of just dropping a weekly podcast. So, okay, if you are driving right now, pull over. And once you are safely stopped, give me a like and a follow on Facebook and Instagram. My handle is at Dr. Jimmy. So that's Dr. like D-R and then Jimmy, J-Y-M-E. So again, I would really appreciate you guys sharing out those pages with your friends so that we can quickly grow a following of horse owners who actually care about making science-based decisions for their horses. Because that's what this whole thing is really about, right? Like giving you guys the knowledge and the information in a way that is simple to obtain, right? You can listen to it while you're driving down the road, while you're cleaning stalls, whatever, you know, however you like to listen to podcasts, just pop your earbuds in and rock on. You don't even have to pay for this stuff. It's totally free, right? And I hope that I'm offering it in a way that is easy to understand so that you guys can make the most informed decision for your horse's nutrition, right? In fact, I'm going to start using the hashtag empowered horse owner on all of my posts because I think that's what we all want, right? We all want to wake up every day and we want to learn just a little bit more than we knew yesterday. So really empowering ourselves to be the best possible horse owner that we can be, and ultimately then use that information to help our horses be the best possible versions of themselves. Okay, today is one of those hot topic episodes. I would put money on the idea that 80% of people tuning into this episode already have a pretty strong opinion of the way that they think that this episode should go. I would also put money on the notion that of those 80% of people, I would say that way less than half of them have actually truly done their due diligence in learning about and understanding this topic as a whole. I have had so many questions come in around the use of soy. So I've had multiple voice messages. I have had a bazillion written messages. So I'm not going to single out any one voice message or any one email or written message. But I will say that the questions have been everything from, you know, as simple as, should soy be eliminated from my horse's diet? Does soy cause allergies? How do I know if my horse is allergic to soy? Is soy dangerous to feed to mares? And, you know, what steps should I take for eliminating soy in the diet? So my goal today is really to start kind of from ground zero and build a story that's based on the unbiased scientific research that's out there, the data that's available on the use of soy in horse rations. So let's start from the beginning. I mean, like the very beginning. And let's answer the question first, you know, what is soy? So soy is short for the word soybean. Soybeans are a food crop. Okay, I'm a really big fan of sushi. So anyone that's ever ordered, I mean, have you ever ordered edamame as an appetizer at a sushi restaurant? I do it all the time. I love this stuff. Well, edamame is just immature soybeans that are still in the pod. The beans themselves haven't fully ripened and hardened and gotten big. So edamame is literally soybeans. It's just a really immature version of them. Okay. So the most common reason that soybeans are grown in, at least in the United States, well, and actually I think probably really across the world is most definitely for food, both for humans and for animals. Soybeans they're used to make things like soy milk, which can be used to make tofu, soy sauce, right? I mean, it's like, I don't know why, but it didn't really connect in my mind that soy sauce was made from soybeans until I was actually thinking through this episode. And I'm like, oh yeah, that makes total sense. But it's just not something that you think of when it comes to soybeans. Or at least I don't. So soybeans are very high in protein, right? Their protein content is really high. So the other thing that soybeans are good for is being used in foods as a meat replacement. So think veggie burgers, right? Any vegetarians out there, you've got to figure out a way. If you're not going to eat meat, you have to figure out a way to get adequate protein and amino acids into your diet. And soy is one of the best options for that. It's one of the most commonly used options. Soy oil. Okay. That's another thing. Oil can be extracted from soybeans as well. So, you know, think about that vegetable oil that you would find on the shelf at the grocery store. Okay. Or the oil that you maybe use for, or restaurants use for deep frying those golden French fries and onion rings that you love so much, right? That's soybean oil has a very high smoke point, and so it's commonly used for deep frying foods. Now, the main reason that soybean is used, especially in animal diets, is that it's a really good source of protein and, like I said, an abundant source of amino acids. And so if you remember to episodes back, I've talked about amino acids before, and they really are, you know, they're the building blocks of proteins. And so if you have something with a high amino acid profile, you're also going to have something that has a high protein content. So soybean is that. The oil that I talked about too is also, the oil itself. Now keep in mind, let me differentiate a little bit. So soybean meal is what's going to have all of the protein and the amino acids. The oil is going to be, high in fat. So it's oil itself is going to be like 99% fat. And so soy oil is commonly used in horse diets or really any animal diet as that cool energy calorie source. And then the last component of soybeans is the whole fraction, like the fibery component. So soybean hulls are often used in equine feeds and other animal feeds, really to help bring in that fiber content. It's a really highly digestible fiber and a good quality fiber. So now that we are all on the same page about what soybeans are used for, let's dig into some of the things that you might hear about soybeans. So probably the first thing that comes to my mind, at least, is the fact that soybeans have anti-nutritional factors. Okay, yeah, I just got done explaining all of these food items that soybeans are used for, and then yes, you heard me right. I said they have anti-nutritional factors. Okay, but do not stop listening, all right? So bring your attention back to me if I lost you, okay? Because this is where some people get off on the wrong trail. They hear that soybeans have anti-nutritional properties and they stop listening, and right there, they believe that soy should be eliminated from everything. But that's not the whole story, okay? Yes, soybeans in their raw form have some issues, but all of these issues are easily addressed through toasting or exposure to heat and moisture, okay? I like examples. So it's kind of like telling someone you should never eat meat because raw meat might contain bacteria or salmonella or something like that. So just don't ever eat meat ever. Okay. Well, that's not right, right? You wouldn't say that. You wouldn't tell someone to never eat meat because meat contains just incredible nutritional components, right? The secret is you have to heat treat it first, right? You have to grill it or bake it or roast it or fry it or whatever your pleasure. But as long as you treat meat with heat to the right temperature, it is completely safe to eat, right? So you would never tell someone that eating meat in general is unsafe, okay? And that's essentially what we do with soybeans. And what sometimes happens is people think about or hear the fact that soybeans have anti-nutritive effects, and they just go straight to, oh, you should never feed them. Well, that's not right, because if we treat the soybeans with heat to exactly the right temperature to take away all of those potentially bad things, but not degrade the nutrition that it still has, right? Okay, so I don't know how many of you have ever actually like left a roast in the oven for too long. Yeah, I actually did that last week. I cooked it at way too high of a temperature, and I cooked it for way too long. Because in all honesty, I was out riding my horse and I was soaking in that like last day of really long daylight hours before the time changed and it was going to start getting dark at like 5:30. So, you know, I'm out riding my horse. I turned the temperature up too high. I shouldn't have done that to begin with, but then I ended up staying outside for too long. Well, when me and my family came in to eat supper, the house was filled with this like awful burnt smell. And I opened up the oven and I found this like, shriveled, charred lump of something that barely resembled food. So yeah, I heat treated that meat. And it was definitely safe to eat, but I went too long at too high of a temperature, and now I have lost the nutritional aspects that that meat once had, right? Not to mention, an extra dry charred roast is not palatable to husbands or children, in case anybody was wondering. So hopefully you get my point, right? Raw soybeans are bad. Don't feed raw soybeans, okay? In the same manner that I would not ask you to eat raw meat, right? So don't eat raw soybeans. Don't feed raw soybeans to your animals, okay? But we don't eat raw soybeans, and we don't make our animals eat raw soybeans, right? So any soybeans that are out there and in the channels for consumption have been exposed to the perfect amount of heat and moisture to get rid of those bad things. So, you know, not only have we gotten rid of the bad things, the anti-nutritional components of the beans, but we also, they've not been heat treated so much that we have lost any of the nutrition or the good quality taste. The next thing that I often hear people say around soy is that it contains too much estrogen and you should not eat it yourself or feed it to your horses, especially mares. Okay. The situation here is that soybeans contain something called phytoestrogens, which is just, I mean, it's a fancy word for a type of estrogen that comes from plants. Okay. So here's another situation where most people stop listening. They hear that soy contains estrogen and assume that that is bad. Okay. Well, there's actually a lot of other plants that contain these estrogens, these phytoestrogens, like alfalfa and other legumes, clover. Do you feed those things to your horses, right? So there's actually some really enlightening research out there on the human side. In one of the largest and most detailed studies ever conducted on soy, there were over 73,000 Chinese women that were followed for more than 7 years to determine if there was any correlation to breast cancer and high levels of soy in the diet. They found that high intakes of soy in adulthood actually lowered the risk of developing breast cancer by 22%. There was also, they found a 28% decreased risk in postmenopausal women developing breast cancer, a 54% decreased risk in premenopausal women, and a 47% decreased risk of premenopausal breast cancer when soy was consumed during adolescence. So that's interesting, right? But you're like, that was in one demographic of women, right? Chinese women. What about other parts of the world? Well, there have actually been very similar studies with very similar results in other parts of the world as well. So a study on over 6,200 women with breast cancer that were living in the United States and Canada That particular study found that women who ate the highest amounts of soy had a 21% lower risk of death. Then there was actually another study on American women. I think there were just under 2,000 women in this particular study. these were all women who were breast cancer survivors for 6 years. And the researchers found that breast cancer recurrence was 60% lower when high amounts of soy phytoestrogens were consumed. So I'm sure that all the men out there are wondering what, you know, if it has these kind of effects on women, what's it doing to us? So I went and I found a meta-analysis of 30 studies from across the world. So these studies came from the United States, Europe, Japan, China. And this meta-analysis showed that, you know, all of these studies basically had the same underlying result or theme. And that was that diets high in soy significantly reduced the risk of prostate cancer in men. Now, I say all of that, but you have to keep in mind these are human studies, not horse studies, okay? So in all reality, we can't draw any kind of real conclusions for horses based on this data. But I guess the reason that I brought it all up was just that it was reassuring to me when I ran across and was looking into this, it was just reassuring to me that soy in the diet could actually be providing a real benefit to both men and women in terms of breast cancer and prostate cancer. You know, I think it's so easy to see these, you know, social media posts and web blogs and, you know, these, I'm going to call them unreliable bloggers on the internet talking about, you know, that soy is going to kill the world. And so to be able to dig into the actual scientific research and the evidence-based data and find that there's actually some really positive benefits that researchers have uncovered about soy, I guess it just kind of gave me this sense of peace. And I wanted to share it on with you guys. So again, not that any of that is directly correlated to our horses, but I think that it is something to keep in the back of our minds. I did find a study on horses. It was in mares where they fed soybean oil to see if there were any changes on the reproductive parameters of mares. And that particular study found that soy oil actually had no effect on cycle length. It had no effect on progesterone concentrations, and it had no effect on estradiol concentrations. So bottom line, if you were to feed soy oil to your mares to say you wanted to increase the calorie content, provide them with some cool energy calories, and you wanted to use soybean oil to do that, you're completely safe to do that. There, according to this particular study, there are no negative effects on reproduction by introducing soy oil into the diet. Now, for anyone that wants to dig into these studies just a little bit deeper, I will be sure to leave the citations for this research in the show notes. That way, if you want to go look them up yourself and dig into it a little bit deeper, read a little bit more, you're more than welcome to do that, and I encourage you to. Now, the third place I hear people getting a little bit wound up about soy is in relation to allergies. You know, they want to know if feeding soy to their horse will cause their horse to develop allergies or breathing problems. And the answer to that is a pretty simple no. Now, unless the horse is truly allergic to the protein in soy specifically, and that is extremely, extremely rare. So I want you to listen very carefully to what I'm saying here, because this is another area that can easily be misheard or misunderstood. Okay, so feeding your horse soy will not cause your horse to have allergies. Okay, so let me say that again. Feeding your horse soy will not cause your horse to have allergies. However, if your horse happens to be one of the very, 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 very few out there who has a true allergy to the protein in soy, feeding soy will cause the immune system to respond. Okay, I hope that makes sense. So I know that there are people right now saying, you know, well, I had my horse allergy tested and it came back saying that my horse is allergic to soy. Okay. I'm going to try to be very politically correct here. I hope that you're making sure that you can have complete confidence in whatever test was performed. So, you know, who performed that test? What are their credentials and their training? Did they use a reliable form of measuring? Meaning, did they pull blood or did they do a skin prick test, right? I hope that you're not relying on a horse hair sample or something like that for this information, right? I mean, even the serum test can be a little bit misleading and certainly difficult to interpret for the average horse owner. The ones that I've seen, they will just put a check mark or a red box on anything that is over, you know, a certain point. So it makes it really difficult for horse owners to really easily understand what is a true allergy and then what is the result of maybe just a hyperreactive immune system. So let's say, for example, let's say you're looking at an allergy panel and the range on that panel is 0 to 5,000. Okay, well, they might choose 100 as the point to indicate a positive reaction. Well, a horse that reads 250 and a horse that reads 4,000 are going to appear to have the same allergy on that piece of paper. But I'm on the very strong opinion that those situations should be handled differently. Okay. So if a horse pings 4,000 on anything, you darn sure better be eliminating that from the diet, getting it out of their environment, looking into allergy shots, you know, taking all of the right steps. But if a horse pings 150 or 200 or 350 on, especially if it's on a variety of different things, okay, that tells me that you have a horse with a compromised immune system. You don't have true allergies to all of those 5, 10, or 20 items that are showing up as red dots on that allergy panel. So I see a lot of allergy panels where you know, soy might come back with like 150 or 400, but there'll also be, that panel will also be lit up all over with other things. So it might be other food areas, it might be insects, it might be weeds, it might be pollen, it might be shavings. But you know, you look at this allergy panel and it just looks like, you know, a red leopard, right? All of these little red spots all over marking all these areas that are supposed allergens. Well, most people, you know, instinctually see all of those red dots and the first thing they start doing is trying to eliminate those food items from the diet. But I believe, again, when you've got those low positives, right? So low positives, I believe that those are really pointing us towards that horse possibly suffering from things like leaky gut, you know, and basically the immune system at that point is in overdrive trying to attack things that are entering the body from the digestive tract in forms that would normally not be allowed past those intestinal tight junctions. So in my experience, if we address the leaking gut, so use functional nutrition to close those tight junctions and help support and get that immune system back into normal functional working order, right? Those foods that horse was supposedly allergic to are no longer a concern. Okay. So all I'm saying here is, you know, pay attention to who is telling you your horse is allergic to something. You know, whether that be soy or oats or wood shavings, whatever it is, you know, make sure that they are using reliable methods for testing these allergens first. And then, you know, when you get those results back, pay really close attention to the numbers. Okay. Don't just look for the red dots and start eliminating all things from the diet, right? Because even if you do that, even if you do get all of the things eliminated from the diet, you're still going to be left with a horse that has a poorly functioning digestive tract, could possibly have leaky gut, and most certainly has an overreactive immune system. And none of those things are good for a performance horse, especially. So I guess, you know, as a general conclusion, so far to date, there is not enough scientific evidence out there that would keep me personally from feeding soy-related ingredients to my own horses. You know, as an industry, we have a really long history of using soy in equine diets. And so far, you know, one of my colleagues, Dr. Vandergrift, always makes the comment, he's like, we haven't run into any three-headed horses yet, you know, and that's kind of a funny joke, but I mean, there's a good point to that, right? We've been feeding soy for a long time. And if there were something truly majorly wrong with it, I think we would know by now. You know, the research that I've been able to find in horses so far points us towards soy as a safe and a beneficial ingredient. In fact, it's one of the very best sources of naturally occurring amino acids, which some research actually suggests are more bioavailable to the horse than synthetic forms of amino acids, right? So if you're going to pull soy out of the diet, you have to figure out another way to get amino acids in. And so that's going to mean adding straight, you know, I'm going to call them synthetics, right? So L-lysine, you know, D-L-methionine, those straight forms. You know, and I've read studies that show that when you can get the amino acids from an actual plant source, that is more bioavailable and better for the horse than adding those, straight, you know, those straight forms kind of manually. Now, if you happen to own that one in 100,000 horses or whatever that number is, that has a true full-blown allergic reaction when they consume soy, by all means, do everything in your power to stay away from soy. But the vast majority of horse owners, I believe that, you know, it just, there are much bigger fish to fry when it comes to fine tuning your horse's diet, right? A good place to start would be testing your hay, but that's a topic for another episode. I think it's a topic I've addressed in past episodes, so you can go check that out. In all honesty, you know, I really do hope that some research dollars get funneled towards studies on horses and soy, because it's a really controversial topic. People are super opinionated about it. And I would really love to see the science to back some of the theories and the opinions that do float around in our industry. I'm not saying that those opinions or theories are wrong by any means. I'm just saying that, you know, at this point, they are unfortunately still just opinions. They're not something that we as nutritionists can stand behind and truly recommend to people. So one last thing, if you don't trust me or on this topic, or, you know, if you just want some additional advice from other equine nutrition professionals, Dr. Rachel Moté actually hosted a really good panel on soy. It was like 2 hours long, and she brought in, I think, 6 or maybe even 7 different PhDs to talk about the different aspects of soy. And it was a free event. I think you can probably still catch the replay on that. So, you know, if you're interested in watching that, drop me a message or leave me a comment on either the Facebook or the Instagram channels. So again, my handle is at Dr. Jimmy. That's at DrJYME. And I will either get that replay link for you, or at the very least, I can certainly get you in touch with Dr. Moté, who can get it over to you. Nutrition's not easy. Yeah. And I mean, it's getting more and more difficult to sort through all of the clutter to even understand what's real and what's not. So, you know, just keep in the back of your mind, if you want to get in touch with someone for a little bit of nutrition advice or a little bit of support, I really encourage you to fill out the nutrition consult form at bluebonnetfeeds.com/nutrition-consult. And someone from my team will get in touch and we'll be able to give you a personalized recommendation. So remember, you can now follow me on Facebook and Instagram with the handle at Dr. Jimmy. Please tell all of your friends about it, and don't forget to use the hashtag FeedRoomChemist. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Feed Room Chemist. If you like what you hear, be sure to share with your friends, post to social media, or give us a review. And as Winston Churchill used to say, no hour of life is wasted that is spent in the saddle. So go saddle up.